Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hello, this is Adam Barrett, and welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today with Kirk Gray. Hi, Kirk. How you doing?
All right, Adam. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad we're getting a chance to do this episode because you and I have been having some conversation regarding different tools for vibration with hull testing. And I know we both have a lot of experience with hull testing, a lot of good war stories. And it's always interesting to hear, you know, people who are learning and getting involved with it describe, you know, what they think is a hull test or what is required to do a hull test. And one of the things that's always discussed is vibration because it's a very big part of it. And systems like a hull chamber are specifically designed to have, you know, a certain type of vibration profile. But there's lots of other ways to do it.
Sure. And of course, there's lots of other stimuli that you can use, stresses that you can use that don't require a hull chamber at all. So, you know, again, we can't emphasize too much that it's really a philosophical approach and a methodology more than it is equipment. For instance, voltage. When we talk about voltage margining and taking using voltage as a halt stimulus or stressor, we don't really need a chamber for that. We can actually do it on the bench where we could actually margin the using a variable power supply, actually go in and maybe different plus five volts, minus 5 volts, each one of those, margin each one of those individually with a variable power supply. And that would be a part of a halt test, really.
Yeah, I think that's so important to establish clearly with the, you know, people that we're talking with about it, because halt testing does not require a halt chamber. Halt testing, the philosophy is to take any stress that you know that it's associated to failure modes, or maybe you're, you know, speculating it's associated to failure modes, and continue to increment it until you see performance issues and failures. And that can be any stress. I've literally done ones out in a parking lot because I was using high pneumatic hammer systems that I developed just for this to try and create specific shocks. And that's a hull test without a hull chamber.
Exactly. And of course, a drop test, for instance, can be a halt test. If you drop to it, you find a limit where the, you know, you break it, you actually shatter it or find a mechanical limit. That is a sub class of a halt, essentially. So any test that you take a stimulus or a stressor to a limit is really a part of the halt approach and the halt methodology.
So one thing that was interesting that, you know, you and I were discussing a little bit is the use of electrodynamic tables and in comparing that to the use of pneumatic hammer tables. Do you want to share a little bit about that? Because you had some good input on that.
Well, yes. And of course, the halt chamber industry has evolved and they've gotten much better. But there are limitations to halt vibration. And one of them is the low frequency and large displacement. You can't really get out of a halt chamber as much as you can from a classical electrodynamic shaker or servo hydraulic shaker, which has ability to produce a much higher energy, much lower frequencies and higher energies at those lower frequencies. So that is a for large larger structures or products that have a lower natural resonant frequency, that's very effective and could be more effective. It's if you have those tools available, like an ED shaker in your facility and a halt chamber in your facility, then it would be advantageous to use both. And, you know, if you have enough samples and enough time, you'd certainly be able to find stimulate probably in a much more energy stimulation at lower frequencies on an electrodynamic table. But either way, the point is to reach a limit. And I remember, you know, I did get to work in Qualmark with Dr. Greg Hobbs. We worked together at Storage Tech as he was kind of creating Qualmark and planning it. And then we, when he joined, when he created Qualmark, I joined him in the company. And one of the times we were in his office, he was very excited about a customer who had just gotten off the phone with him about, you know, talking about his success with vibration in a product that he had just halted. This was a customer. And Greg was telling me the story, but as I was leaving his office, he says, "Oh, by the way, he did it on a classical ED shaker." And I said, "Well, yeah, Greg, that's, you know, of course, if he took it to a limit and found the weaknesses, that was the whole point." And of course, that is the whole point, is finding the weaknesses, no matter what stress you're using.
Yeah, I think it's also important for us to highlight and discuss for a moment the difference between an ED table and a halt table, because they're structured very differently for two very different intentions as far as what type of stress to put in a system.
Right. ED, well, I'm not as familiar with the ED shaker. Maybe you can talk about those two.
Yeah. Yeah, the ED shaker, you know, I feel that the two objectives are, with the ED shaker, is you're looking to have a very controllable frequency and acceleration.
Right.
In other words, you want to be able to put in or sweep a specific range. And in doing this, effectively, you're being able to have control to where you can look for resonant frequencies and responses to specific frequencies. Mm-hmm. Where with a halt chamber, you are doing multiple axis in all three axes and rotation around each axis, and you're hoping to do it with multiple frequencies at the same time and not have a specific frequency.
Right, with a very high, and also you have a very high impact and a wide kurtosis, so that you're producing up to six sigma pulses or hammer hits that will cause a lot more fatigue damage a lot faster than an ED shaker in general.
Yeah, one of the analogies I used once for a discussion about this was, somebody had asked me, they said, "Well, we know of a place where we can use an ED table to do our Hall testing." And I said, "Okay, you can do that." You know, they didn't describe a specific frequency or resonance they were looking for. They wanted to do a Hall test in the sense of putting as much vibration energy in as quickly as possible to find a failure. I said, "But here's the difference if you go to an actual halt lab. It would be the equivalent of if you just had developed a new car and assembled the first prototype and you wanted to kind of test and see what kind of failure modes occur from physical stress. Well, if you took a hammer and just went around hitting different parts of it at different frequencies, you know, you might find something that's loose or makes a strange noise. The other option is to take it and drive down an extremely bumpy road and then at the end of that to see if anything is loose or making a strange noise. And what you've done is effectively done the hammer test very quickly, because you've done a lot of different directions, axes, and frequencies all at the same time." And that's kind of the difference with using an ED table versus a halt table. A halt table wants to get all the axes and frequencies done as quickly as possible to expose failure modes. Now, the downside is it's hard to tell exactly what input caused the failure because you did them all at the same time, but that's okay if you're just looking to observe the failure mode.
Right. Once you get into the failure analysis, that gives you a lot more information about what can be done to strengthen that. But I guess one of the things that Greg would say is that, and we could look at the two tables, is one is really built, the halt multi-axis table is built for stimulation, and the ED shaker does much. Is much better at, for instance, simulation of a, say, an engine vibration on a jet engine vibration, or some kind of known inherent frequency like a truck vibration profile that you could actually apply to very precisely to the product under test, which you can't control the frequencies in a halt chamber. You can only control the intensity. You can modify the frequencies with some different polymer paddings or foam placement between the product, but it's not meant to do that, and it's really meant to stimulate fatigue damage.
Yeah. What are some case studies, you know, that you've been involved in where you turn to an ED table to try to expose failure modes?
Actually, I haven't. I've heard of people doing it, but in general, when people talk to me and they want to do HALT, I go to the HALT lab. I did, of course, as a senior test engineer at Dell, we did have an ED shaker, but that was a shock and drop, and actually they were a separate department from reliability. So I did observe their testing. I don't think they tested to limits, so they weren't really doing HALT. They were doing more a simulation of what they had estimated was maybe a worst-case condition. Or truck profiles or shipping profiles, you know, and doing that kind of thing. But not really trying to look for any particular weaknesses, more trying to meet a packaging or spec requirement for vibration.
Okay, so it's a pass-fail type of test for...
Right.
Okay. Right. The difference of what you're saying between stimulation and simulation, which I think is very good description of the two.
Yes, the T is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one example I had where I turned to an ED table was a system that had it was a microphone, speaker, and camera system all built together for conferencing. Uh-huh. And they were very good and had very good tools for diagnosing sound and sound quality. And they were finding in certain frequency ranges of sound that there was interference, and they couldn't figure out what was causing this effectively failure mode because it was unsatisfactory. And instead of turning to a HALT table with multiple broadband frequencies and vibration to see where the system would fail or the structure would change, which would have been, you know, one approach, and then mm-hmm. to see if you can improve that, I chose to use an ED table. And what I did was I broke the system down into subassemblies, taking it apart in different degrees as I did sine sweeps through it. Of a frequency range that followed the likely frequencies for the sound. And in doing so and continuing to break it down, I was able to see what areas had sensitivities around that frequency range they were seeing as an issue.
Right.
Ultimately, I was able to get it down to realizing that a lot of the plastic staking, where you have, you know, the pins going through a hole and then they're melted to kind of stake them together.
Right.
That was an area that had some sensitivity around those frequency ranges that they were noticing. So what I ended up finding ultimately is the failure mode of variation in the heat stake strength and some assemblies responding to that frequency and some not. And I ultimately was able to prove it by getting parts that were not heat staked yet and taping them together. So that would effectively simulate a very poor heat stake. And that always responded right in that range. So they were able to find that by improving the manufacturing process and quality control process around the heat staking that they could avoid that. So we were able to drive to the failure mode by increasing the stresses, but it was important to understand the frequency as a kind of a guide, a beacon as to where we wanted to go. So the ED table worked very well in that case.
Right, and I think when you're looking for a specific failure mode or failure phenomena that, you know, you were investigating and trying to target stimulating a particular event or a particular mode of failure that you had already seen in the field or they had observed.
Yeah.
So you were doing a really kind of a failure analysis or investigation on what was the cause. And I think that was a very excellent use of a specific controllable frequency table, which is an ED shape.
Yeah. Yep.
And, cool. But, you know, and in general, in HALT, you're of course trying to see, you're not investigating or making or have knowledge of any particular failure mode at the time when you're doing the development of a new product and subjecting it to HALT. And so I think that was that's a good example of how the difference and when to use an ED shaker or what ED shaker has an advantage in failure analysis. But also, you know, we talk about vibration equipment. And maybe in another session we can talk about the thermal chambers because thermal and vibration are, of course, very connected. And when people think of HALT, they think of chambers that provide that combined environment of both vibration and thermal. And maybe in our next session we could talk about the differences in some of the thermal and combined chambers.
That sounds really good. I look forward to that. Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad we got to have this discussion. And if any of our listeners are interested in learning more or contacting us, please use the links in this podcast to submit your questions or comments. All right.
Yes. Thank you, Adam. And let's do it again.
Sounds great. Thank you, Kirk. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.